This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. When it was reported that legendary actor Bruce Willis was retiring due to a condition known as aphasia, it came as a shock to many, but also led to conversations about what aphasia is. Now, being a disorder which affects someone's ability to communicate and to use language, it can be hard for people to imagine what it's like, to imagine not being able to do so when it's such a vital part of our daily lives. So in conjunction with Better Hearing and Speech Month, I'm speaking today to Cecilia Santiago, speech-language therapist with the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing, as well as Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia and is joining us to share her experience thus far. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll start with you, Cecilia. You know, I mentioned that aphasia is a disorder that affects language, but perhaps could you elaborate more on what is aphasia?
So aphasia is actually a language disorder. It doesn't stand on its own. It is caused because of a neuroimpairment, so a neurological impairment that occurs in the brain. And the neurological impairment can be either a stroke, can be head injury, so falling off a ladder, hitting your head. It can be a cancer growth in the brain, or it can be also a feature. Aphasia can be a feature of dementia. In the form of Alzheimer's or frontotemporal dementia. Now, aphasia affects someone right across all languages that they previously used to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is actually a disorder that affects the processing of information, so the information that we receive, either through what we hear or what we see. So reading as well is affected. And it also affects how we produce our message. So it can be in our speech, it can be in what we write, and it can also be in our drawing sometimes. It can be in the form of our gestures, the use of our gestures to communicate. But primarily, it's a language disorder affecting these modalities or these channels. It does also affect sometimes the use of numbers and calculations.
Cecilia, you mentioned across different languages. So does that mean, for example, if someone is bilingual or multilingual, that affects all the languages that they speak?
Yes, it would affect all the languages. However, probably at a different gradient, you know. So if someone uses English more frequently, mm-hmm. that language may be what he may appear less aphasic in compared to, let's say, Cantonese, where he may not use it so much, or another language. But it does affect the person across all languages. Yeah.
Mm. All right. I'll turn to you now, Jess. You know, I understand you were recently diagnosed with aphasia. Perhaps could you share how aphasia affects you? You know, how did you become diagnosed with it?
I recently got aphasia attributed to a stroke, and and prior to that, I have got a very active life. I used to have a rigorous exercise. I used to have a teacher come to me one Wednesday and Monday, and for the next days, I do running. So I jog up to 10 to 12 kilometers, mm-hmm. and on weekdays, I jog about seven mm-hmm. kilometers. On top of that, I have got a very busy job. Also, I have got a very active life, an active social life, and I also take care of the family.
So how did your aphasia affect your ability to communicate with people, right? Cecilia earlier explained that it's a language disorder, but perhaps could you give us some examples as to how it affects your ability to communicate?
It struck me one Christmas day, and I got aphasia the day before, and I got admitted on the Christmas day. During that time, aphasia was like something blurred to me. I thought I had gathered everything, but when I speak to people, they don't see what I see. And then I suddenly lose the ability to walk and to talk. The right things that I've saying, I thought I was saying, but I may not say it to the right people. I'm just speaking rubbish to them. And my speech apparatus became very damaged. I couldn't understand what was I speaking.
In terms of reading or writing, did your aphasia affect that as well?
Yes. It affected both my handwriting, listening, reading aloud or quietly, and writing.
Have you had any improvements in how it affects you since you were initially diagnosed with aphasia?
Initially, you wouldn't have understood me. I would be picking literally just language which you won't understand. There'll be all kinds of languages which you or any person would not understand. But to date now, things have become improved. Sentences are formed and speak with formation.
We'll go for a quick break now. I'm speaking to Cecilia Santiago, speech-language therapist with the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing, and Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. May is Better Hearing and Speech Month, and in conjunction with that, we are talking about aphasia today. And that's a language disorder which has received much attention after news reports that actor Bruce Willis had been diagnosed with it and is retiring from his profession as an actor. So on the show today, I have Cecilia Santiago, a speech-language therapist with the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing, telling us more about aphasia, as well as Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia and is sharing her experience with us as well. Now, Cecilia, I understand that there are different patterns of aphasia that it could present differently from person to person. Could you elaborate more on that? You know, what are the different types of aphasia and how do they differ from each other?
Yeah, so aphasia is actually, there are many types, as you mentioned, Suan. It has two main categories. One is fluent aphasia and one is non-fluent aphasia. When we talk about fluent aphasia, it is someone who could be talking incessantly. They could be talking, you know, nonstop for a while. However, when you listen to the content of what they're saying, it is very hard to work out what they're saying. Some of it may even contain some jargon. Some of it may contain words that are mixed up with other words. So the sounds are mixed up. However, when you analyze that person's speech, you will find pockets of information that actually relates to what they're trying to tell us. Now, people with fluent aphasia actually have got very significant comprehension difficulties. So they would struggle significantly to manage a conversation because they have lost a little bit of that turn-taking, the listening, the processing of what is being said to them. Now, we go on to the non-fluent aphasia, and the non-fluent aphasia is whereby that person would present with stilted speech, where they are struggling to find words that they want to put into a sentence that will fit exactly how they want to express themselves. Someone with fluent aphasia would also have difficulties in constructing sentences sometimes, where they have got all the ideas of that are coming into their mind kind of competing. So they may start off with a sentence and then stop and then start with another sentence, stop, because the construction is difficult. Now, both fluent and non-fluent can affect reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, we are looking at speed. We are looking at the ability to form letters. We are looking at how the word looks. So that memory of how a word looks when they're trying to write a word. And with the non-fluent aphasias, often what we see is they may want to say, oh, I woke up in the morning and I looked out the window. And what they might say is I looked out the door. And what's happening here is that they're choosing a word that is very similar in the same category, door, window, opening. You know, they may choose a word that doesn't quite fit that sentence, but it is not far from the meaning. Under these two categories, we've also got other types of aphasia, and they're normally termed as Broca's aphasia, Wernicke's aphasia, mixed non-fluent aphasia, mixed fluent aphasia. There is also one type that falls under fluent aphasia, which is called primary progressive aphasia. Mm-hmm. And this is the only type of aphasia where we see deterioration in the person's speech and language and communication. All the other aphasias, we actually expect an improvement over time, mm-hmm. with therapy, with help, with a multidisciplinary team approach. So one thing I want to get across during today's discussion is aphasia is actually a language disorder. So it does not affect the person's cognition, the ability mm-hmm. to think and receive or learn new information. However, aphasia can present with cognitive difficulties secondary to an impairment. So you can have aphasia and you can have cognitive difficulties because of a dementia type diagnosis. So what is very important to recognize with someone who has got pure aphasia is that they have got full capacity to make decisions, to decide on what their life choices are. However, it is difficult. The channels in which we use to get information from them, or for them to express themselves, or for them to process information that's coming to them, that's where the challenge is. Mm. However, they know exactly what they want to say. They know exactly how they feel. But it's the expression and the processing of information that's coming that's difficult. So that's a really important distinction to recognize here.
Mm. It's the challenge in articulating themselves, right?
We tend not to use the word articulating because articulation in speech therapy means the sound of how they sound.
So, I see.
Yeah. And it's actually the expression, you know, because we are such expressive beings, mm-hmm. aren't we, as humans, you know? We express through different ways. So it's the difficulty in expressing that is a challenge, and the difficulty in receiving of information as well. Often someone who has got some of that comprehension difficulty, because it's difficulty processing, they struggle to follow the conversation. Mm. Yeah. And sometimes they may manage one-on-one, but in a group, it's difficult to follow everything that's being said.
Mm.
Yeah.
Jess, which type of aphasia did you have? Was it fluent or non-fluent?
The Broca aphasia.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then, let's say in a group setting, right? I mean, when you're in a conversation with other people or other people are having conversations near you, are you able to follow those conversations?
I can. Most of the time, I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. When it comes to other people speaking with you, right? Are there certain things that make it more difficult for you to keep track? You know, for example, we were talking earlier, right, that speaking slower helps. Is that a challenge when people speak too fast?
Yes. I tell them so if they are getting too fast, because I'm slow. Mm-hmm. So if I want them to be slow, then I've got to tell them, hi, I am met the stroke, and therefore you need to slow down for me to answer you back.
Mm, all right. Cecilia, you said that, you know, aphasia usually comes with other conditions, right? Especially neurological disorders, you know, things like stroke or traumatic brain injury or dementia in some cases. How would you determine or diagnose if that person has aphasia? And I guess from there, is it common for cases of aphasia to remain undiagnosed or unnoticed?
Yes, yeah. So when a speech and language therapist is referred a patient with communication difficulties, it is the job of the speech and language therapist to use a battery of assessments. And that is those assessments may be formal or informal. And the formal assessments, actually informal as well, would be looking at how the person interacts verbally and non-verbally, mm-hmm. How they look at pictures, and when the speech therapist says, can you point to this picture, to see whether they are actually pointing to that actual picture or something similar. And there's a whole battery of assessments. So we would assess the person's comprehension skills, both to what they're listening to, both at single word level, sentence level, a whole discussion, for example, and then being able to retell that story and to see what are the ways that that person is actually using to communicate. Now, the role of the speech and language therapist here is to identify what that person's strengths and difficulties are. And in therapy, we use that person's strengths to aid the difficulties. Speech therapy also looks at providing that person with feedback. So often, in some cases, when we're working with someone with aphasia, they are not actually aware. The brain hasn't always processed when they've said something wrong. And in real life settings, I mean, when someone says something wrong, we as, you know, polite human beings, we won't correct that person. Mm-hmm. Now, the speech therapist doesn't necessarily correct the person with aphasia, mm-hmm. but we try to raise that person's awareness as to what they're saying and how they're saying it. Sometimes multi-syllabic words are difficult, so we may put them in print and get the person to think of the syllables and break it down. Sometimes we work on actually auditory processing. So we may say two very similar words. We'll get that person to tell us whether they're the same or different. We would look at two very similar words in meaning, and then we would get that person to describe the difference in that meaning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are cases where aphasia goes undiagnosed. Mm-hmm. And I have had in the past where post-stroke, what I didn't mention earlier on is aphasia can be from mild to severe or profound. Mm-hmm. So it comes on a, you know, it's on a continuum. And sometimes after stroke or head injury or cancer, it is not obvious that person has word finding difficulties or difficulties stringing their sentence. It may come across as though they're just feeling a bit tired, mm-hmm. or they're feeling a little bit weak, or they're not in the mood even sometimes. Mm-hmm. But once they get discharged home, they may suddenly realize, family members will realize, okay, there's something not quite right here. And that's when they go back to the doctor, or they then start to seek, they hear about things being talked about post-stroke, and they start looking for speech and language therapists. And the classic ones that I have would be patients coming to me maybe 3 months after a stroke or 2 months after a stroke, saying, you know, I've managed to get back to most things, but I noticed that when I'm trying to do a presentation or I'm trying to do a complex conversation where I'm cutting a deal, mm-hmm. I realize all my words get jammed up, or I can't get my words out. And that's also a sign that when the pressure is high, mm. or stress levels are a little bit high, that's when your language functions, your ability to think up words, you know, those become a little bit more strained. Mm. Yeah, and that can be a very mild form of aphasia. Mm. So I have seen cases where they get referred much later on because the patient or the family members have highlighted. It's not always evident in a doctor's, you know, a doctor's consultation, because the person is so able.
And it's such a short time frame as well, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but it's the person themselves that realizes, wait a minute, there's something not quite right. You know, I feel I'm not as fluent. I can't think up words as quickly as I used to.
And this would be different from the usual, I guess, getting tongue-tied. If you know, and it's normal, right, for some of us to struggle to find the right words, but this would be very different from that.
Yeah, it's different and it's more frequent. Okay. You know, it happens very easily, and it can actually, the impact on that person, if they don't have the insight to seek help, or they're not encouraged to seek help, or they think that, oh, this must be normal. Because after brain injury, you must recognize also that brain injury can affect other parts of the brain that control other things, mm-hmm. like emotions. It can affect how you reflect on things. So someone who has these problems and doesn't seek help will start to lose confidence. And that's where I think help aids the person to recognize, okay, these are ways to assist this. And certain speech and language exercises that we do, specifically tailored at the different types of aphasia, will address these problems mm. and will raise that person's confidence levels.
Mm. How soon should someone seek help for aphasia? You know, does it get worse if they don't seek speech and language therapy early, or would it just plateau?
I strongly encourage, if there is a problem identified either by the patient, the person, their family, or their medical team, the sooner the better for mm-hmm. help. Because even though it's mild at the beginning stage, it has the potential to actually become worse, not because of brain impairment, but it can become worse because the person themselves feels like they can't do something. And that's where the speech therapist comes in to provide constructive feedback and help to reflect on what is happening. So the sooner, the better. And sometimes seeing the speech therapist just requires an actual assessment, you know, an assessment to identify what the problem is. And the speech therapist doesn't work in isolation. We mm-hmm. work with the primary doctor. We work with the occupational therapist. We work with the, sometimes there's a neurologist involved. We also work with the physiotherapist because we want to see how that person is working in an activity where it requires a lot of movement and maybe less speech and comprehension.
Mm, all right. It's a multidisciplinary team, right? Really.
Yeah.
Jess, you've been, you know, going through speech language therapy for your aphasia. Could you give us some examples of what that has been like? You know, what does therapy involve for you? What sort of activities or exercises are you required to do?
It's helped my writing, understanding of languages,
mm-hmm.
reading and answering of questions and speeches a bit more smoother for people. Back then, when I first got a speech therapist, all she was doing was helping me to identify words.
Mm-hmm.
But for just a simple apple mm-hmm. or simple food. And then from there, it's become more and more, and now it's become a whole sentence. That's also helped in my reading aloud mm-hmm. and also reading quietly. And in my story, I find reading softly is like a open face towards reading aloud, as in I find it easier to understand versus reading aloud.
I see. I guess, what do you find most difficult when you are undergoing these exercises?
Understanding these exercises and the moment doesn't mean anything, but as you're going to it one by one,
mm-hmm.
I expect your language cognizance to be more and more larger.
How long have you been going through speech language therapy?
3 months.
Cecilia, for most of your clients, right? How do you manage their expectations? You know, how do you, what do they expect in terms of progress of their aphasia, as well as how long therapy would take?
Yeah, so managing expectations, both of the person with aphasia and the family, requires actually a lot of counseling as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first see a patient with aphasia, our goal is actually to highlight to them, to educate them on what works and what doesn't work. So a lot of people think that, oh, if a patient has or a person has speech therapy, then we don't need to do anything else. You know, that's that covered. But actually, as a speech therapist, I try to train the family members, the caregivers, to do what we are doing in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if it's really difficult for that person to find words, even single words, to communicate for themselves, and they are using just sounds. However, they have got the ability to process written words. We would try to get the family to make sure that the person is given options. So what would you like to eat today? You know, and actually have pictures or the written words or both of chicken, fish, prawns, meat, and get that person to actively point to those pictures, whichever they want that day. And actually, once that person has pointed to that picture, present that item. So it's, you know, say, okay, we'll cook some chicken today. We will, how would you like it cooked? And that, again, you might want to present word choices for that person. So, you know, when you work with someone with aphasia, you're not working in isolation. It will not work.
Mm-hmm.
You need to actually work with that person's environment.
Mm-hmm.
You need to train person's loved ones to participate in conversation in a modified manner, depending on the severity. Sometimes that the family would be able to challenge their loved one with aphasia in different ways. For example, encourage, once the person has gone through certain levels in therapy, mm-hmm. where they have been gaining confidence, I might say to the family member, okay, I think it's time to get, you know, Michelle to start ordering food in the restaurant. So I would try to get the family member to recognize, okay, I think now we can back off a little bit. We need to let the person with aphasia to start making selections in a wider environment. So there are more challenges, or there, you know, picking up the phone, even just the mere activity of picking up the phone sometimes is so traumatic to someone with aphasia, because they are so afraid that when the person starts rattling off, they would just become completely stuck and they can't, you know. So the activity of picking up the phone, the activity of just saying hello, the ability to recite prayers. Yeah, we may suggest the family member. So it's making, although the speech therapist may be working on very structured material in therapy, these need to be translated into functional activities at home so that the person and their family can see the changes over time.
Mm. The team is not just the healthcare workers side, it's also on the individual side, right? Their network, their family. Jess, how has your family supported you in your therapy? You know, could you give us some examples?
The family members can include me in conversations,
mm-hmm.
Everything. Whether aphasia or non-aphasia, everything. And then repeat or stress on important words to not to give me time to talk and take their patience, and then don't correct my mistake. Just be patient,
mm-hmm.
and use short sentences.
Do you find that people understand what it means for you to have aphasia?
No, I got to stress it to them that I've been faced with a diagnosis of stroke, and therefore I would need them to be more patient and take the patients to be more to be more permissive with their time.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What is your goal with speech language therapy? You know, where do you want to be?
Of course, to be like you.
Are you happy with your progress right now?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I'm glad to hear that, Jess. We'll go for one more break. And when we return, we'll talk more about how family members can help people with aphasia to cope, as well as helping them build their self-confidence to communicate with others throughout the process of therapy. Now, on the show with me today are Cecilia Santiago, speech-language therapist, and Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Lim Suan, and on the show with me today are Cecilia Santiago, speech-language therapist with the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing, as well as Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia. Now, Cecilia, considering that aphasia affects the individual's ability to communicate, and I know that you mentioned that in most cases, you know, aphasia itself doesn't affect their cognitive abilities, but I can imagine that it must get quite frustrating for these individuals to not be able to express themselves, right?
Yeah, so that frustration, actually, as a speech therapist, when I see the frustration in the person, it's actually a good sign mm-hmm. for the speech therapist, because it tells me that that person has insight into the difficulty and that person has that emotion to express that difficulty. And it's very important to support that person through. So it's also educating the family to recognize that, yes, that frustration is there. How can we help it? And it's through the speech therapy tools that, you know, the tools that we use in speech therapy, like what Jess was mentioning just now, the speaking slower, you know, not cutting in, giving that person time. All those are actually very strong points to help the person with aphasia recognize that their talk time or their communication time is valuable and it's being valued by other people. So when I'm working with people with aphasia, I actually quite early on try to counsel the family members and the person with aphasia to reflect on what aphasia is and to accept it as a lifelong condition that can change, can become better,
mm-hmm.
but also to encourage others to understand, to educate other people who have no idea what aphasia is. So many people with aphasia, they are afraid to go out and talk to others. And one of the things to actually encourage people with aphasia is to talk about their problem, their difficulty, and to tell someone,
mm-hmm.
I have some speech difficulties or I have communication difficulties, please bear with me. And, you know, most of my patients who have tried this and done this, they come back and the feedback is that once the fruit seller or the, you know, whoever they spoke to mm-hmm. heard that, they realize, oh, okay, yeah, no worries, uncle, you know, take your time. Yeah, no problem. And I think as Malaysians and as human beings, you know, once we are told something new, we try to accommodate to it. So I think that in itself helps deal with frustration and manages expectations and allows the person to see that, oh, I'm a little bit more empowered because I was able to do this next step, you know? Yeah.
Hmm.
But it's also recognizing at which stage the person with aphasia is prepared to do that and ready to do it.
Hmm. Yeah. Jess, has your aphasia affected your independence? Are you able to, you know, for example, like what Cecilia mentioned earlier, right? Going out on your own, communicating with strangers, for example. Is that something you're comfortable with?
I've done bits and pieces of it. To be frank, not much.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something in future, I'm going to try more. In future, I'm going to let my family let me out more. Mm-hmm. And then I try to tell the waiters and waitresses what I want.
Hmm. Are strangers okay with understand it when you tell them what is it that you need?
No, I start off with, I've got a case of aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I need your help to let me speak slower.
Mm. And you've had no issues with that?
So far, none yet, but because I speak so slowly.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's great to hear that you've not had issues. Let's talk about technology for a bit, right? Is it different for you to talk to people over Zoom, like us, for example, compared to in person?
No. I've been exposed to Zoom, and then even when I was working, it was also to Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to efficient time,
mm-hmm.
I also use Zoom.
Mm. And from your side, Cecilia, as a speech language therapist, has technology been useful or hindering your work? Especially because there would have been a time when we wouldn't be able to meet clients face to face, right?
Yes, yeah, it's actually been quite an eye opener for me during the pandemic time. It's really been something that speech and language therapy has. For years in countries like America, New Zealand, Australia, where distance is very far, speech therapy over the computer has been going on for years in some of these countries. In Malaysia, it was new up until the pandemic. So a lot of my colleagues and myself now do speech therapy over Zoom. And remarkably, I actually think with many of my aphasia patients, it has been even more effective than face-to-face therapy. And why is that? I've been trying to reflect on this, and I think it's because the person with speech and language difficulties, whether it be aphasia or anything else, they can actually see themselves. They can see themselves, they can hear themselves, and they can begin to monitor themselves a little bit better. They are also having to do a lot more multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to multitask, your brain is working in parallel with communication and doing something else. And I think depending on the level of difficulty they're having and how the speech therapist has assessed them, I think people shouldn't be concerned that a session is being done over teletherapy or Zoom. You know, teletherapy is the official term. The other type of technology that has been useful for people with aphasia is using certain programs online, certain applications that are helpful in selecting pictures or drills or speech and language exercises that are on the web. So there are these resources. Some of them are need to be paid for, and some of them are free.
Jess, how often do you have speech language therapy?
I have it 3 times a week. That's about 3 hours a week. One hour per session.
And outside of that session, you know, how do you continue practicing what your speech language therapist works on with you?
I continue like reading books. I started off with really baby books, as in What's an Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Now I moved to more serious books. And then slowly I'm even moving to daily reading of newspapers. Yeah.
Mm. Is the speed of reading something that you have to work on as well?
Yes. I find I cannot understand too much. If I cram too many things in a day, I can only read a bit. And after that, if I read too much, everything goes in a jumble.
All right. And in terms of talking, how do you practice that?
I am speaking to you now. It's considered quite fast. previously to that, the person that you hear me cannot understand a word I say.
I see. Just some people, I'm thinking some people might feel, oh, it's better to not include people with aphasia when having conversations, right? Is that the right way to do it?
I guess depends on the individual. The individual doesn't mind swaying off what they can do, then it's good that mm-hmm. they can come out and share with others what they can do and encourage the others to follow suit.
On that point, sorry, Sue, and I just wanted to add, yes, you hit the nail on the head there, because it's a huge shock to the system, you know, both for the person and the family mm-hmm. when they realize that this person who was holding a very top job, who was able to run many things at one time, suddenly find that they can't find the words. And some family members that I've worked with have told me that we don't want to call in the friends, or we don't want to call in the family. We just want to get this sorted before mm-hmm. we open the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I when I see cases like this, I have to be very careful, because obviously we're dealing with emotions and feelings, but it is also within the scope of the speech therapist to guide the family and to encourage. The more exposure at the very early onset, the better, so that there isn't this stigmatization that I do see in some patients, in mm-hmm. some persons with aphasia, where they're so stigmatized as to how they're going to be judged. And when that happens, they then lose opportunities and chances to express themselves mm-hmm. because they want it to be perfect. And in therapy, actually, we encourage those words to come out wrong. Let it come out. Don't let it be stuck inside, because your brain is basically having a little bit of a tug of war. Which word do I choose? What do I say? How do I say it? You know, and it's better out
mm-hmm.
so that the listener, the person who is listening to the person with aphasia, can help the person with aphasia identify what they want to say. And so therefore, I do encourage... Jess, you made a very valid point that, yes, it depends on the person.
Mm.
But I think it also depends on the environment. The environment also needs to be educated, you know. Don't speak for the person. Don't give them time, like what we were saying earlier on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very important one, right? Always check with the individual and don't speak on their behalf, because they are having issues expressing themselves, but that doesn't mean they can't think for themselves.
Correct. They still have the capacity to make decisions and to decide. And sometimes it needs a little bit of encouragement and exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other thing. I mean, a lot of families after this diagnosis of aphasia, and because there are lots of other confounding problems like mobility issues, logistics, how do I get someone, you know, the person with those difficulties from one place to the other,
mm-hmm.
They may be exposed less to the outside world. And that, if you leave that for too long, that can affect that person's confidence. Like mm-hmm. it's suddenly, oh, I'm being released, you know, and I have to, face it all by myself. So we gradually encourage families to take it a step at a time.
Mm. Yeah. Just to backtrack a bit, Cecilia, this is something I wanted to ask earlier. For individuals who are multilingual, right, does that present a challenge in speech-language therapy? Do you have to pick one language over another to prioritise, for example?
Yes, that does play a part, the prioritisation of language. And we go with the language. So that's another... You've again brought up something very interesting, Suan. Sometimes a person with aphasia may start speaking in all languages. You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of, another language. And sometimes the families will say to me, oh, how come, you know, what is this happening? So what I do encourage in the choosing of languages is, what is the person with aphasia more inclined to use?
Mm.
Yeah. And sometimes within that session, we also use different languages. And that might be to just tap into the person's ability to recognize, process that word. You know, let's say the word I am, You know, ayam, ikan, and fish and chicken. That person may want to order that food in the restaurant in different languages. So we do explore, but we wouldn't necessarily do it right from the very start. We would actually encourage families to keep to one language initially, and then as confidence builds up, let's expand to other languages. So the choice of the speech therapist as well when working with the patient, if the speech therapist speaks the languages that the person speaks, that's a huge asset. That's a big asset, yeah.
All right. I'm going to round up our discussion with asking both of you, and I'll start with you, Jess. What would you like people to know about aphasia?
First, before I can go on to this one, let me touch on my group.
Mm-hmm.
My group is a group focuses on Roald Dahl's job.
Mm-hmm.
He had a wife by name of Patricia Neal, and she developed aphasia when she was in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
And her aphasia is very much like the aphasia that I face. He wanted a lot of people, more than 1 hour a day, to coach his wife. He wanted people 6 hours a day to coach his wife. And with that extent, I've also gone to my friends, and I have one friend, her name is Sue. She has drawn out a lot of people from all sorts of my life, from my exercise, running, and all my different groups,
mm-hmm.
and transformed a group that don't talk to one another previously, and has made it possible for this group to help me as a bigger group to reach a higher goal.
Mm.
And so I want to tell everybody to make it possible for achievements which they cannot achieve.
Mm. And anything you'd like to add, Cecilia?
I think that's a really powerful message from Jess. I wanted to also say to Jess, you know, you mentioned just now 3 to 4 months that you've had this, and I think you're doing so well to come on air and to speak. I would like to get across the message to people out there that as complex as it sounds, aphasia, I believe and I know that there is help out there. Do not be alone. Do not think that it cannot be helped.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's mild, there is help out there. There are speech and language therapists who are present here in Malaysia, and you can find them in the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And be positive in the approach to managing aphasia and the difficulties in communication. Know that there is always that next step to go to, and that there's help out there. So don't do it alone.
And once again, you know, the organization that Cecilia mentioned is the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing. If you need more information, you can always, you know, look up the association to find out more. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Sue Ann.
Thank you, Sue Ann.
It's a great opportunity. Thank you.
You've been hearing from Jess, who was recently diagnosed with aphasia, as well as Cecilia Santiago, speech-language therapist from the Malaysian Association of Speech, Language and Hearing, or MASH as it's commonly known. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.